Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning we have what we call Kids Zendo. This is first part is for our bright children. My name is Sojin. What's your name?
My name is Leo.
Great, Leo. I know you. I've seen you before.
My name is Jules.
Simone.
Okay. Thank you. Well, this morning I have a good story. And here's the story. One day, that's often how these stories start out. One day, a little hare sat under a fruit tree and thought. What, my children, did the little hare think about under the tree? Of course, you don't know yet. Here's what he thought. He thought, what will happen to me when the earth comes to an end? Whoa. He thought that at the very moment a fruit fell from the tree. Bam! Off ran a little hare as fast as his legs could carry him. So sure he was that the noise of the fruit falling to the ground was that of the earth breaking to pieces. He thought the earth was exploding. And he ran and he ran and he ran, not daring to look behind him. That was a big mistake. Brother, brother, called another little hare who saw him running. Tell me, what happened? But the little hare just ran on and did not even turn around to answer. But the other hare ran after him, calling louder and louder. What happened? What happened, little brother? What happened? At last, the little hare stopped just for a moment and said, the earth is breaking into pieces. At this, the other hare started running still faster, and a third hare joined them, and a fourth and a fifth, till 100,000 hares were racing through the fields. Oh, God. And then they raced through the forest and the deep jungles and the deer and the boars are like huge pigs, and the elks and the buffaloes and the oxen and the rhinoceroses and the tigers and the lions and the elephants, hearing that the earth was coming to an end, all ran wildly with them. But among those living in the jungle was a lion. A wise lion who knew everything that took place in the world. And when it became known to him that so many hundreds of thousands of animals were running away because they believed that the earth was breaking to pieces, he thought, this earth of ours is far from coming to an end, but my poor creatures will die if I don't save them, for in their fright they will run into the sea. You know, that happens. Sometimes buffalo or animals run off a cliff because they're so scared. And he ran at such a pace that he reached a certain mountain that lay in the path before they came to it. And as they passed by the mountain, he roared three times with a mighty roar that they stopped in their mad flight and stood still close to each other, trembling. The great lion descended from the mountain and approached them. Why are you running at such a pace? He asked. The earth is breaking to pieces, they replied. Who saw it breaking to pieces? He asked. The elephants, they replied. Did you see it breaking? He asked the elephants. No, we didn't see it. The lion saw it. Did you see it? He asked the lions. No, the tigers saw it, they replied. Did you see it? Asked the tigers. The rhinoceroses saw it, they replied. But the rhinoceros said, the ox saw it. The oxen said, the buffalo saw it. The buffalo said, the elk saw it. The elk said, the boar saw it. The boar said, the deer saw it. The deer said, the hare saw it. And the hares said, that little one told us the earth was breaking. Did you see the earth breaking? He asked the little hare. Yes, Lord, replied the hare, I saw it breaking. Where were you when you saw it breaking? He asked. With a trembling voice, the little hare replied, I was sitting beneath a fruit tree, and I thought, what will happen to me when the earth comes to an end? And at that very moment, I heard the noise of the earth breaking, and I ran. The great lion thought, he was sitting beneath a fruit tree. Certainly the noise he heard was that of the fruit falling to the ground. Maybe a big, a big melon or something. Right. So he said, right on my back. And he said, and show me where you saw the earth breaking. The little hare jumped on his back, and the great lion flew to the place. But as they approached the fruit tree, the little hare jumped off, so frightened he was to return to the spot. And he pointed out the tree to the lion, saying, Lord, there's the tree. The great one went to the tree and saw the spot where a little hare had been sitting and the fruit which had fallen from the tree. Come here, little one, he called. Now where do you see the earth broken? Little hare, after looking around and seeing the fruit on the ground, knew that there had been no occasion for his fright. He jumped once again on the lion's back, and away they went to the hundreds of thousands of creatures who were waiting their return. The lion then told the great multitude that the noise the little hare had heard was that of a fruit falling to the ground. And so all turned back, the elephants to the jungle, the lions to the caves, the deer to the riverbanks, and the little hare to the fruit tree, and they all lived happily and unhappily. And in between, forever. So, what do you think is the moral of this story?
I think the moral of this story is to pay attention
more. Yeah, pay attention more. Yeah. Yes?
I think the moral is the key to sometimes in danger because if they had noticed that the earth wasn't breaking up, they wouldn't have been running.
A little slower.
The moral of the keep stints in times of danger because they noticed that the earth was breaking up. They probably wouldn't have been running.
Yeah, that's right. So if the little hare had, yes.
If the earth was breaking up and they smelled, they would have known that they couldn't have escaped it because eventually it would come this way and hit the other.
Sides
of breaking up will come
round
and track them.
Wow. That's pretty complex.
Yeah. Because then if the earth is breaking up, you can't just run away from it.
Why would there be a big crack and as big as an elephant.
Yeah.
The earth
was making him sweat when they think about silly things.
Well,
I think these are all really good answers. You be careful, you'll break your head off. You wouldn't want to see that happen. Well, thank you very much, kids. I really enjoyed reading the story, and I appreciated all of your answers. And have a good day.
Everybody,
I broke my thumb.
Well, you know, this story, this is an adaptation from a Jataka tale, which is the old tales from India about Shakyamuni's rebirth as an animal, usually. Of course, Shaka, the lion, is Shakyamuni Buddha. And one of his incarnations is a lion, and so he brings the little hare back to reality, whereas the little hare is living in his imagination. This is a very fundamental story in Buddhism, which every Buddhist knows, that when you see a snake in a dim light, you think it's when you see a rope laying in the distance in a dim light, you think it's a snake. This is one of the most fundamental stories in Buddhism. When you see a rope at a distance in the dim light, you think, oh, that's a snake. And then somebody shines a light on it, and you see, well, it's just a rope. So, this is indicative of our three natures. The nature of seeing things as it is, seeing things as representations, and seeing just as pure imagination. Rarely do we see things as it is. Suzuki Roshi used to talk about this a lot. He said, to see things as it is, not to see things as they are. Although that's okay, but to see things as it is the statement. As it is means thusness or suchness, or it's true. To see something, to see reality as it really is. Because mostly we see through our representations. Representations are our ideas about what something is. As soon as we name something, this is a representation. If I say, I see that bell, that's a representation. Because although it's a bell, as a representation, it's not a bell. It's, I don't know what it is. It's what it is. So to understand what it really is, you have to play the bell. The bell has to be played in order to sing, and when it sings, we know what it is. So when we play the bell, we play the bell in order to allow it to sing, or coax it to sing. So we become one with the bell. When we become one with the bell, then we allow the bell to sing. When we are not one with the bell, we simply have an idea that it's a bell. When we don't think this is a bell, and we simply are one with this the reality of what this is, then it will sing. So no matter how much we hit it or whatever we do to it, it's not really singing its true voice, as long as we hold it as a representation of our mind. So how we make contact with something is our practice of seeing things as it is and relating to things not as objects. Although every entity has an objective quality, it also has a subjective quality. And we make it what it is. So everything in this room is a fabrication of our imagination. We imagine something, and then we put our imagination into action in the realm of representations. And if we're and then we practice Zazen, which is to sit in suchness, in the realm of things as it is. Things as it is we experience things as it is when we're not discriminating, when we're not thinking about it, but simply intuitively relating. Because intuitively relating is not discriminating. When I say discriminating, it means not discriminating on the basis of self-centeredness. We have to separate everything, all these objects, in order to relate. But not on the basis of self-centeredness. This is how we experience our Buddha nature in its pure essence. This is how we practice with an essence of mind. Of course, representation and imagination are important. They're very important parts of our of our mind. But the problem we have that causes so much suffering and ignorance and inability to see straight is because we act out of representation and imagination without touching the ground of reality. So our society fundamentally was designed, we think, hope, to be based on the ground of reality. But because we act out of selfishness and representation and imagination without touching the ground of reality, we're living above the ground of reality. And so we live in the realm of circularity. Circularity means, and this is a Buddhist term, which means things go round and round and never become resolved. There's never any resolution to the ups and downs of society. It's simply the water just washes back and forth, and when it washes this way, we get drowned, and when it washes that way, someone else gets drowned. So the water is really what we call peaceful. We want peacefulness, you know, but that's not possible because of the law of circularity. So every time we build up something, every time we build up an aspect of society, it's beneficial. The opposite comes along and washes it away. So it's very hard, because we don't base our society, although theoretically we base our society on reality, the bedrock of reality. We lose our way because we lose that, we're out of touch with it. So imagination, you know, we try very hard in our practice to live in the ground of reality. We get fooled. We fool ourselves by getting caught by living in the realm of representation. Representation is like habit energy. Habit energy and as you know, all of our actions and thoughts plant seeds in the seedbed of our mind, and we keep perfuming or watering those seeds, and they keep sprouting over and over again, and so we get caught in this circular the circular cage, or the circular the treadmill of the in this cage that we call our life, and it's very hard to get unstuck. We just keep doing the same habitual, repeating the same habits over and over again until we stop and reflect. So the little hare, you know, was caught by his imagination. He didn't reflect on what was happening in his imagination. He didn't even look back. You know, he just thought, the world's breaking apart when I heard that crash. That's the realm of pure imagination. Maybe he got caught by his field of representation. But there was no reality to anything that he was that he was responding to. So the lion, his Buddha nature, brought him back. He was very lucky. He started this stampede in his mind, and he went crazy trying to flee when there was no place to go. So he was rescued by Shakyamuni, and who took him back and said, look, you know, it's just this is what happened. This is the reality. The reality was that a fruit dropped, bam, on the ground. And your imagination just led you astray. So this happens all the time. For us to keep continually come back to the field of things as it is in our practice. But we get caught by our representation and by our imagination. Representation means that we live in a field of thinking that things are what they are, but they're not. And it's very hard because of our habit energy to stop that process, which is called creating karma. We keep creating karma because we keep we're stuck in the realm of representation. It's like trying to scratch the itch on your foot through your shoe. You know, there's this separation between how you really want to get rid of the itch, but you can't touch it because there's a barrier there. And so to see things as it is to see beyond the field of representation of our mind. And we just create a world, a whole world of representations, and it narrows our world down. So through our senses, we collect information. And consciousness records that information and separates it out, and we understand things through we can actually see things as it is, because we have not yet processed the thoughts. When we process the thought, then we distort what we see and hear and feel. Not that processing the thought is wrong, it's that this is where the realm of representation takes place. If we can just let things be and get beyond the thought process to our intuition to experience things as it is. Intuition simply means to experience things as it is, without the distortion of the thought process, which doesn't mean the thought process is wrong, as long as we don't lose the reality, then the thought process is very helpful. But the thought process and the imagination, without the foundation of things as it is, leads us astray, because the mind invents its own reasons for things, and imagination is totally free form. So when we sit in zazen, we let go of the thought processes, even though they're still there, and the realm of imagination just keeps rolling along. I never thought of that before. I have all these thoughts that I never thought before, and they're just like flickers of the mind passing through, because the mind of imagination has to continue. It needs something to cling to all the time. And our deliberative thinking, we let go of that as well. But it keeps coming up. But we understand how it works. If you really understand how, if you really pay attention to the way the thought process is working, you can see how we keep coming back. We keep letting go of the thought processes and keep coming back to just this. So sitting in pure mind. Sitting in the center of pure mind. Pure mind means, purity means non-discrimination. Not discriminating, that's pure thinking. If there's pain, it's just this sensation. Pain is just something that we call a certain sensation. But because we're so used to discriminating, we can't help saying that. But if you let go of that concept, it's just a sensation. And so we're not turned by our fears. And we can see clearly what it is. And when we have pleasure, it's just another idea that we're attached to. So all sensations are just what they are. Just to experience all sensations is just what they are. There's an old koan. Nansen was walking with the governor, and they came upon a flower bed, and they had a little conversation, and in the end Well, the conversation was that the governor said to Nansen, there was a great sage, quoted a great sage, who said, "I and the universe are one piece." Isn't that wonderful? And Nansen pointed to a flower and he said, "People today do not understand, cannot see this flower as it is. They do not see this flower as it is." And do we see this flower as it is? That's a great koan for each one of us. Do we see this flower as it is? Or do we see this flower as we imagine it? Or as we thought we saw it yesterday? It's not the same flower today as it was yesterday. As a matter of fact, nothing is the same as we saw it yesterday. Even those things, even diamonds, which are the hardest, seem to be, or at one time were, the hardest element, the hardest rock. Are not the same as they were yesterday. As soon as something appears, it disappears. As soon as something appears, it disappears. You know, everything looks like it's continuing. There is something that's continuing, and something that's not continuing, and something that's continuing, and something that's not continuing. But it's just the way things seem to be. Things seem to be doing, standing in their place all the time. And in a certain sense, yes, that's true. But in fact, it's not. So looking into impermanence is, as Master Dogen says, is to see things as it is. We really need to look into the nature of impermanence, and then we can enjoy our life. We may think that being born and growing up is to enjoy our life, and to decline and die is to not enjoy our life. But actually, it's all the same. I think it's a great adventure to enjoy your life as it's declining, because you can, your life gets faster and faster. It seems to get faster and faster. It seems to get faster and faster because it's all in our mind. It's not really any faster, but we think it's faster. It seems to be faster because we live in our mind. So, how to maintain and enjoy your life? Because this cycle is the most natural thing. How could it not be all the same? Everyone got, even though there's no such thing as birth and death in a true sense, the appearance of birth and death, we live within the appearance of birth and death. And so it has one complete cycle. It's one complete cycle. And we should be able to live out the natural course, realizing that that's the way it is. Often when I attend people that are dying, I don't think, "Oh, this is awful." I really don't think that. I may be, you know, maybe I'm overlooking something. There's grief and there's sorrow and so forth. But the way I actually see it is like I just helped this person to fade out. Because that's what's happening. And it's not bad, and it's not good. It's just the way it is. So, there is a good side and a bad side, but just the way it is the real side. And it's wonderful. So, when I fade out, please don't cry. Do you know Master Dozan, when you probably know this story, when he was about to go, he sat up, you know, like in Zazen, and he said, "Well, folks, I'm going now." And I don't know what he said, you know, about the story. You know, here I go, goodbye, you know. And then everybody started crying. And he said, "Uh-oh." No, actually, he died. He died, yeah. Everybody started crying. And then he woke up. And he said, you know, "What are you doing? You don't understand." He said, "I'm going to give you one more week." and we're going to have a stupidity purifying meal. And so in that 1 week, they made this big feast, you know, and they had a feast, and the stupidity purifying feast. And he sat up, he said, "Okay, okay." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay." Boom. Goodbye. I really like that story a lot. It's not that I try to like it, I do like it. So, we get easily caught. We're easily caught by our feelings and our emotions. And we should be. It's good to be caught by our feelings and our emotions. But it's also important to realize I am being caught by my feelings and emotions, but actually, that's not what's really happening. So, you know, everyone that's been born has died. Isn't that amazing? Everyone. In the whole history of the world, every single person, animal, tree, rock, that has been born in the world has died, so to speak. So what's the problem? There's something, we have to understand that. We have to understand the reality of that, and that it's inevitable, the unavoidable. So, we have in our imagination, in our field of representation, we have all kinds of ideas about it. And we have ideas of rebirth and so forth, which are all really wonderful. But there is a reality to imagination, because it's real imagination. It's not that the imagination itself has any reality, but the imagination itself is reality. It's a real imagination. And our representations are real representations, but the representations themselves are not reality. So there are levels of reality, actually. But basic reality is when we're no longer, when we simply experience something intuitively, which means directly, without the distortions of thought and imagination and representation. So So that's for the practice. We can do that from time to time, but it's hard to do it all the time. And that's why we sit zazen. So there's time for one or two questions, if anybody. Yes.
Yvonne Rand told me that she has a beautiful bell in her zendo, not that big, but almost. And she found it in someone's house, and they didn't know it was a bell, and they were using it by the fireplace to keep firewood in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Kaplow went down to Mexico with some of his students, and they went into a Mexican restaurant someplace, kind of fancy Mexican in a hotel, I think. And lo and behold, there was this wonderful, enormous, I think it was Japanese, Buddha figure. I don't know which one it was exactly, but it was really one of the best, one of the really good ones. And people were using it to you know, put the cigarettes out on and collect, throw pennies at, you know, how they do. And so they talked the owners into letting them have it. They brought it back to New York.
I was with you in everything that you said.
Until?
Except. The one thing that I want to raise a question about feels like kind of heresy, and that is the phrase, things as it is, mm-hmm. which you've been very, you like that phrase a lot. And I would like to say something about why I don't like it. I don't think it's just grammar, but... it seems to make a point of erasing difference. Like you covered that. You said things really are distinct, but then I think that the story you told about Nansen and the governor expresses what I'm trying to say about not liking this insistence on this, what seems like a sort of cute phrase, things as it is, which erases form, you know, the form side of form and emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have to keep form and emptiness all the time?
Yeah, that's why I said things, which is form, as it is that's why that phrase contains both.
I take it as you telling me to not see this difference of things, but to see only the it, the sameness. But Nansen, he said, look, you know what he said.
There are different ways of expressing something. So I think they're both correct. This is in order to express reality, it's very hard to do it without discriminating. So when you say things, that's multiplicity. As it is oneness. So it expresses both sides as a koan. A koan is using ordinary language in a way that expresses non-duality, which is impossible in language, ordinarily. That's why the koans seem so they boggle your mind. And the reason they boggle our mind is because we live in the world of representations instead of the world of seeing things. So, I understand what you're saying, and I understand the problem. But I like it. Okay, there's one more. Barbara?
Roberta.
Roberta, sorry.
Thank you for
from
Mrs.
the story.
Mellon.
Thank you. I think the point in going back to your children's story, which is a universal story that has a clarity in terms of when we don't see things as they are, see things as it is, we are caught up in suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we give meaning where there is no meaning,
mm-hmm.
there is a delusion or an illusion that follows,
mm-hmm.
that is takes us into a journey that is, again, that repetition that you spoke to. And we're caught up in the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way off, to be out, you know, to step out of that,
yeah.
is to really take that moment to be with what is.
Well, that's right, because we habitually conditioned, our conditioning habitually directs our mind into the channels. So we sometimes step out of the box.
Sometimes we can.
Yeah, I think it's good to step out of the box, because if we don't step out of the box, we just keep perpetuating our conditioned responses.
Yeah.